Before we get into the episode, Blockware is giving away a free Antminer S19 XP and 1 year of free hosting. This deal is worth over $7,000. To enter for a chance to win, all you have to do is sign up for the Blockware Marketplace, complete the two onboarding steps, and head to our Twitter account, @BlockwareTeam, and like and retweet our pinned tweet. For more information, click the link in the description. Now, enjoy the episode. The
mainstream media narrative is that Bitcoin is boring, old tech, but blockchain is interesting. The reality with Bitcoin a lot of times is the complete opposite. A blockchain, all it is just a distributed database. Distributed databases are inherently less efficient than centralized databases. And if you look at databases across a spectrum, on one end, you have the most centralized databases like the Amazon AWS, Microsoft Azure, Google Cloud, right? And on the other end of that spectrum, the most distributed and decentralized database in the world is Bitcoin. And everything else that plays try to play in between that spectrum of fully decentralized and most decentralized is kind of where crypto sits, right? People don't realize how early we are.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Blockware podcast. This week we have on Yujia from the Blue Shirt Group. Yujia, welcome.
Thanks, Mitch. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation. I like to start often talking about Bitcoin, right? And how people got into Bitcoin. I always find everyone's Bitcoin's origin story very interesting. So what was your orange pill moment? How did you really discover and get into Bitcoin?
Yeah, so I'm Bitcoin class of 2017. I think similar to a lot of people, I first got in just through trading Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies in that 2017 cycle. But in that bear market in 2018 and 2019, that's when I really started studying and reading more on Bitcoin. And it didn't happen overnight. I think with a lot of people, it definitely took a few years for me to really have that light bulb moment. It was a progression. But I think by 2019 and that 2020 cycle when the bull market was taking off, I came in through the trading path and I was an aspiring trader. I was trading futures markets. And as soon as I understood Bitcoin, like really got it, I essentially just sold everything, went all in, and never stopped and stopped trading completely. And so yeah, it's definitely a passion of mine. And so that's kind of my journey into Bitcoin. It really kind of started from the traditional trading path, I would say.
Yeah, a lot of people have heard similar stories. You come for the gains and then you stay for the revolution. Was there any specific piece of information that really made it click for you where it changed your mindset from, oh, this is something volatile where I can trade and make fiat versus, all right, this is something I just need to accumulate and hold for the long term?
Like I said, there was a few different instances that really kind of opened my eyes to it. In that 2017 cycle when I was trading, I was using Coinbase at that time. And just that first, transaction when I sent it from Coinbase to my own private keys, essentially my hardware wallet. And I had it on both screens. I had Coinbase on my left screen and I had my private, my hardware wallet and my private keys on my right screen. And I sent it, it took about 5 minutes to get there and I was really nervous during that 5 minutes. But at that point in time, I understood the narrative or the concept that this thing is perfectly or absolutely scarce. And I recognized that that Bitcoin that was, going from Coinbase to my private key was unique. And that was pretty eye-opening to me because, 5 minutes later, it just showed up. And that was probably my first orange-pilling moment that really kind of like, wow, this is peer-to-peer. I knew kind of at that point it didn't go through a centralized third party. And this was a unique and a transaction that settled with finality, right? So that that was pretty unique. There were so many, you know, moments across my journey in Bitcoin, but there was one point that it was kind of tied to the perfect scarcity aspect of Bitcoin. When I kind of thought of this analogy that it was kind of like a reference to the show that I used to watch when I was growing up, and that was popular, called Lost. There was a character in that show, Desmond, and he was the show's constant. Like, you know, Lost was like the show where all these strangers landed on this island, and they were bouncing through time. And to me, I had this like moment where I was like, whoa, Bitcoin, because of its perfect scarcity, right? The 21 million Bitcoins or 2,100 trillion Satoshis, right? I had a moment where I was like, well, this thing is like the only economic constant in the universe because of that perfect scarcity. So so it's almost like an atomic scale for measuring value. So it actually is a really perfect unit of account, right, from that standpoint. So that was another, you know, moment that really kind of made me, I think, grasp Bitcoin a lot further. And then in the crash of 2020, after COVID hit, Bitcoin crashed from, it was like sitting around $8,000, $9,000, and it crashed all the way down to $4,000. And obviously the whole market was going down as well. So that was a big moment for me, because by that point, you know, I had done probably, you know, a few thousand hours of reading and listening to Bitcoin at that point, and had gone down by 50% in just, I think, a day. And to me, from a fundamental standpoint, I was like, well, what has changed about Bitcoin? Nothing. It's just, you know, the network has not changed at all. The price is lower, but the network is still backed by the most decentralized and most powerful computing network in the world, right? So that's another moment that I realized, you know, Bitcoin, while during its adoption phase, as it's capitalizing into the future money of the world, it has, of course, currency, like exchange rate risk, but that's, to me, it's temporary. But it doesn't have, where it's different from all other assets, it doesn't have any impairment risk. Mm-hmm. So to me, you know, Bitcoin is in reality, you know, from Wall Street's perspective, they perceive it as speculative and it's risky. To me, it's actually one of the most durable and permanent assets in existence. And when I say permanent, I mean, you can't destroy it, right? Because of how distributed and decentralized it is. You can't, it's not gonna, unlike real estate, it can't get destroyed by natural disasters, or it doesn't depreciate, right? You don't need to keep up maintenance on it. And also, just from the perfect scarcity aspect of it, it's permanent in the sense that there can never be another Bitcoin created after all of them have been mined. So it's permanent from a real standpoint as well, right? Like, if you think about like real returns versus nominal returns. So there's so many of those moments. I could keep going.
I mean, you touched on a lot of great ideas there. I love the framework, and I haven't seen the show Lost, but just in general, the idea that everything is changing in the world. And there's a famous quote, it's like, the only thing that's guaranteed to happen is change, except for now Bitcoin, right? Yeah. Everything else in the world is going to change, but we know that 21 million can't change. And another idea you hit on that I think is super important is this idea of just education and like putting in time, right? You said you invested 1,000 hours studying Bitcoin. Otherwise, you may have been part of the group that sold on that COVID crash down to 4,000. So I think that gap in just education is what causes the volatility in the Bitcoin price, right? Because people theoretically, if they understood what Bitcoin was, nobody would be trading it at all. Nobody would be selling it. We would just all be hodlers. So definitely, my thing, Michael Saylor said this before, before you invest a dime into Bitcoin, you have to invest time, because if you don't understand it, you're going to be scared out of the market. So lots of great points there, Yujia. Let's talk about Blue Shirt Group. What do you guys do, and then what's your role specifically?
Absolutely. So I'm a managing director at the Blue Shirt Group. Blue Shirt Group is one of the world's largest or leading global investor relations firms. So we essentially help companies go public and help with their investor relations function. And then also we provide after public market or IPO support in terms of the quarterly earnings processes and helping our clients market their stock or their story. And we're essentially like the middleman between Wall Street and management. We work with the brokers, all the investment banks essentially, both on the banking side, the research side, and then we work directly with them to help market the company's stories.
Gotcha.
Go ahead.
Yeah, what do you think the future of Bitcoin companies going public is? Because right now it seems to be mostly miners, and then you have Coinbase. So do you expect a lot of these private Bitcoin companies to go public in the future?
I would hope so. So just taking a step back, I lead the Bitcoin practice at Blue Shirt Group. I joined Blue Shirt about 2 years ago. Before Blue Shirt Group, I spent about 8 years at Qualcomm, right? I led the corporate FP&A department at Qualcomm for half the time, and the other half I was in the business unit doing commercial finance for our chip business, helping price and structure pricing deals for our Chinese OEMs. And it was during this last bull market that I saw a big opportunity because there were, I think even in 2021, there were almost, 15 or more public Bitcoin miners already. Because it's such a capital intensive business, and they require, with public markets, you have easier access to capital to be able to grow and grow your hash rate. So I saw a huge opportunity, and obviously I had done well from Bitcoin at the peak of the last cycle. And so I saw an opportunity. I wanted to really come into Blue Shirt and help build out a Bitcoin practice and franchise. So I purposely came from my previous career at Qualcomm to Blue Shirt to help grow this franchise. You're right. Right now, in terms of the different type of companies that are able to successfully build on Bitcoin, for the most part, it's Bitcoin miners. It's a very straightforward business model, right? It's not an easy business, but at the end of the day, they build data centers, or they host their ASICs and computers, plug it in, and they're able to extract Bitcoin out of the 10-minute blocks, and they can sell it for dollars. And then, so there's right now, I think, over 20 publicly listed Bitcoin miners. And then also, obviously, there's like the Coinbases of the world, FTX before it blew up, and MicroStrategy. But that's it. It's not really that diverse in terms of the companies that are building on Bitcoin. But my hope is, obviously, over these next couple of cycles, we're going to see an emergence of business models that are other than just miners come online. I work with Swan Bitcoin. I advise Swan Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And so they're obviously trying, their goal is to be like the Fidelity of Bitcoin financial services, end to end, from your first Bitcoin. They have an on-ramp service through Swan Bitcoin where you can buy Bitcoin, and then they provide a lot of educational content, they want to hold your hand through the entire life of your Bitcoin journey, right? All the way through your retirement planning to inheritance planning. So that's another one. That's one I'm really excited about.
I'm definitely rooting for Swan. They're a good Bitcoin company.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So through this next cycle, at the end of the day, I think it's just really early. Right now it's just miners, but there is, a ton of other business models that are looking for capital. It's been a tough market, obviously, in the past 2 years, with the heightened interest rate environment, low liquidity. Capital has been really tough to come by. But there are tons of Bitcoin companies that are not just miners that's growing and building in this bear market. So I think this next cycle and the cycle after that is when we're going to see an emergence of other business models that are going to be able to successfully build on Bitcoin. It's tough, right? Like Bitcoin, because it's so volatile, you definitely have to you have to find a model that can manage through that volatility across the cycles. Mm-hmm. Whether you're a miner or a financial services provider or a Lightning company, it's not easy. And but I think as the market matures, as the price of Bitcoin gets higher, more capital will flow into the space to help support and fund more Bitcoin companies. And we're going to see just a lot more different business models that are part of, whether private or public.
Yeah. Something we've talked about a lot at Blockware is just this idea of surviving the bear market, because it doesn't really matter what your Bitcoin business model is. During a bull market, they're all going to make money, right? So if you can just manage to survive when times are bad, then everybody's going to be feasting during the bull market. What do you think the general investing public in Wall Street is currently missing about Bitcoin right now? Because you and I, we see the bright orange future very clearly, but obviously not everyone does. So what do you think they're missing?
Oh, man. so many things. I think people don't realize how early we are, right? You know, in terms of global Bitcoin adoption, I know it's in the financial, it's in the news every single day. Bitcoin has done an extremely good job of entrenching itself in almost all aspects of society. So we hear it every day. At least, you know, I do because I'm a Bitcoiner. But I would think even for non-Bitcoiners, or we call them normies, right? It's still pretty prevalent in the news, and they hear about it, and everyone knows Bitcoin. But I think I always have to remind myself how early we are. And it's the same with Wall Street. You know, there are maybe, I think there's over 4,000 investment funds across the U.S. alone, right? And based on my experience over the past years working in this space, last year was an extremely difficult year with all my clients. It was very difficult getting meetings with the buy side and investment funds. And because it's just, they still view it as a very speculative investment. And if you don't understand Bitcoin, then you don't understand Bitcoin miners or any of the other businesses that's building on Bitcoin, right? So there's a lot of misconceptions still, because I think they still get a lot of their news from just traditional media outlets, right? And because Wall Street is, you know, they have full-time jobs, right? The portfolio managers are managing hundreds of millions of dollars, not billions of dollars. And so while me and you, we've had time to really dig deep and do a lot of work developing our own understanding of Bitcoin, I just don't think these guys have the time, right? Mm-hmm. Just being in this world for the past 2 years, a concentrated fund might have 10 to 15 companies in their portfolio, and they're managing that, and they're constantly looking for new ideas in this environment. A lot of these funds that we're talking to, they're managing north of 50 different companies in their portfolio. So just imagine how little time you have, and that you have your family responsibility. So there is, but to answer your question more directly, these past 2 years where I've really focused is really trying to orange pill Wall Street, right? Any chance I get, I'm getting on the phone or in person, meeting with people from Wall Street, whether it's the sell side, the buy side, and just trying to give them a better fundamental understanding of Bitcoin, specifically to the fundamental drivers of Bitcoin's price, and why I think it's you know, while they think it's a speculative investment, I think it's the most, one of the safest investments out there. And also one of the key things I've been trying to do is helping them understand why Bitcoin is not crypto, why it's different fundamentally from crypto, right? Mm-hmm. And and I think that's probably a good area that we can talk about because those two things are really important, right? And from someone that's new coming into this space, those are probably the two biggest hurdles. Traditional Wall Street right now still views Bitcoin or categorizes Bitcoin in as part of the larger crypto narrative. And and to me, it's doing a disservice to them. I try to explain to them that if you just kind of look at all the Bitcoin or all the crypto companies out there, only besides Coinbase and FTX, really it's only Bitcoin companies that's actually listed and trading publicly on public exchanges, right? Because crypto companies, they essentially, their goal is to just raise capital through ICOs, right? They're not leveraging existing public markets to raise capital. And Bitcoin is just fundamentally different. And where I try to break it down for them is, you know, the mainstream media narrative is that Bitcoin is boring, old tech, but blockchain is interesting, right? Whereas I say the reality with Bitcoin a lot of times is the complete opposite. The reality, in my opinion, just from, you know, from first principles, a blockchain, all it is just a distributed database, right? Distributed databases are inherently less efficient than centralized databases. And if you look at databases across the spectrum, on one end, you have the most centralized databases like the Amazon AWS, Microsoft Azure, Google Cloud, right? And on the other end of that spectrum, the most distributed and decentralized database in the world is Bitcoin, right? And crypto and everything else that plays try to play in between that spectrum of fully decentralized and most decentralized is kind of where crypto sits, right? And there's, you know, Bitcoin is obviously open source code. They copied Bitcoin's original code and then they tweaked it. And so anything that tries to play in the middle, like an Ethereum, trying to do smart contracts, you have to use larger blocks, and that over time, you know, leads to more centralization, right? Like half of Ethereum nodes are hosted on AWS. But my main point there is, and I try to kind of put it into words that they understand, anything that plays in the middle of this spectrum doesn't have a moat, doesn't have a long-lasting, sustainable competitive advantage. And we saw this last cycle, right? Because at any point in time, you can always crank, a competitor can come in and crank up that centralization and be better, faster, and cheaper. We saw that this last cycle with Solana and Avalanche, as an example, right? They were able to crank up the centralization and use Ethereum's narrative against it. And essentially, they took away DeFi market share and NFT market share just by being better, faster, and especially cheaper. So I just think anything that plays in the middle, you just don't have that moat. And to me, it just doesn't make any sense. And I've been really trying to get Wall Street to focus more on Bitcoin, because everything that's in the middle, unless you're a VC and you can get in early, right, for the exit liquidity on retail, I just don't think it's sustainable. And there is no, you know, publicly traded Ethereum company, right? So I've been trying to. So that's one of the key things I've been trying to do.
I could not agree more on all of that. I mean, this time last year when FTX went down, just people, normies, are like, they think it has something to do with Bitcoin. I'm like, no, that's completely different. Crypto and Bitcoin are not the same thing. So I could not agree more. Do you think the understanding starting to shift with the SEC going after Binance specifically and then also naming all of these shitcoins on Coinbase's lawsuit as unregistered securities?
Absolutely. I think that's having an impact. I think it highlights the regulatory risk with some of these other crypto projects, and it highlights, I think it really highlights the differentiation of Bitcoin in that there is no founder or team behind it that an SEC or regulatory body can go after, right? That's kind of what Kathy Wood always talks about. There is no throat to choke. Bitcoin is a digital commodity. And so I absolutely think that they're starting to recognize that. I mean, you can just kind of see from all the recent SEC, no, not SEC, but all the ETF filings, it's Bitcoin ETFs, right? It's not crypto ETFs. So from a broader macro perspective, I do think that's having a major impact.
Yeah, I agree. And eventually, a lot of the altcoins, the other blockchains, right, they just become so centralized over time that it's like, it's completely obvious what they are, right? Like you mentioned, half of the ETH nodes are run on AWS, and then they shifted to proof of stake. So that's obviously going to centralize over time. So definitely distinguishing between Bitcoin and crypto is one of the biggest things. You mentioned earlier that you work with Swan Bitcoin, and you also work with Blockware. What are some of the other Bitcoin companies that you work with, and you know, which ones are you really excited about? Taking Bitcoin off the exchange and putting it into self-custody is a big responsibility. And if you're going to do that, which you should, you need to make sure your seed phrase is secure. Simply writing it down on a piece of paper is not the best way to go about it. All sorts of things can go wrong when you do that. You're going to want to stamp it into metal. Using one of StanSeed's metal plates, you can ensure that your seed phrase is immune to fire damage, water damage, and just general erosion that happens over time. Head to stampseed.com and use the code BLOCKWARE15 for 15% off at checkout, and you'll sleep much sounder at night knowing that your Bitcoin seed phrase is stamped securely into a metal plate.
Yeah, absolutely. Iris Energy is one of Iris Energy was my first Bitcoin client. I started with BlueShare in January 2022, and I signed Iris Energy, I think in March, just a month later. So I was really fortunate to be able to land Iris Energy very early on. And I've been on a journey with them ever since. Iris Energy is, they are one of the world's leading, probably if not the number one, leading Bitcoin mining companies that's publicly traded. They're not one of the large, obviously Marathon is, and Riot are a lot bigger. They're right now at, I believe, 5.6 exahashes. But if you look at the number of Bitcoins that they can mine on a monthly basis right now, they're number three. And so they really view themselves as a data center infrastructure platform that's currently monetizing their platform through Bitcoin mining. But yeah, I'm very impressed with that management team. Dan and Will are the brothers that founded Iris Energy back in 2018, and they've really built a pretty exciting platform. It's a vertically integrated strategy, unlike a Marathon. Their main goal is to own and control as much of the process as possible, from the land, the electrical connections, the power agreements. They build and own all of their infrastructure and their data centers and the miners, obviously. And the reason why I like that is because, you know, I'm a pretty hardcore Bitcoiner, and the whole reason why I'm in Bitcoin is because I don't want that counterparty risk to the existing financial system. And Iris Energy's strategy is very, in terms of their ethos, it's very similar. Their ethos and their values is very closely aligned to Bitcoin, right? Like if you think about the vertically integrated strategy, the whole goal of that is to lock down all risk and have as little counterparties as possible in your business model. Because if you're building on top of Bitcoin, in order to survive through that volatility, I think you really have to really manage risk well. And one of the key things to doing that is just have as little exposure to counterparties as possible.
I 100% agree. And we've seen miners get wrecked when they don't own the land, they don't own the infrastructure. They can get rug pulled out of their their site and have nowhere to plug in their machines. That's something at Blockware we've talked about a lot. And our site in Kentucky, where we have our clients, we own all of that land and infrastructure, and that's working out really well. So that's good to know that Iris is following sort of a similar game plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thesis is that the hash rate itself, like, is commoditizing, right? Like, each generation of ASICs that mine Bitcoin that's produced by, like, Bitmain, MicroBT, Canaan of the world, each generation of ASICs, the efficiency gains are slowing down because of Moore's law, right? I think mm-hmm. right now the leading nodes are, like, 3 nanometers, and Bitcoin miners around 5. So there's not much more you can shrink it. And as that's happening, of course, the hash rate is commoditizing. And we can talk about Blockware as well, because that's kind of the something that Mason is trying to take advantage of, right?
Yeah.
Developing a more of like a SaaS model on Bitcoin mining and building out a hash rate exchange, because it's right. But because the hash rate is commoditizing, really where the bottleneck is actually access to cheap renewable power and data centers and infrastructure, right? So that's kind of where Iris Energy is focused. They're focused on building out proper, high quality, tier one data centers that really can keep the miners hashing and operating in their optimal operating environments, and which really can make the life of those computers as long as possible. Right. And so I do like the more vertically integrated strategies. And they also, right, they have they use 100% renewable energy. They have 3 sites in British Columbia that's using 100% hydro, which, yeah, having I think if you're a Bitcoin miner, having a more renewable energy mix definitely helps decrease the attack surface from a regulatory standpoint in terms of your social license to operate, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You talked about the commoditization of ASICs, and we can jam on this for a little bit because it's our main thesis here at Blockware, right? So we recently launched the marketplace, which allows users to buy and sell hosted ASICs, right? And this isn't a model that really could have existed before, right? Because when the new machines were coming out, they basically made the last machine obsolete. But as each new machine is only marginally better, we're seeing these ASICs have an extended lifespan, right? The S19 has been around for, 2 or 3 years now? And it's still one of the most popular ASICs, right? And so projecting this going forward, there's going to be a huge, massive secondary market for Bitcoin mining rigs. And like you mentioned, the bottleneck really is sites. And this is sort of my bullish case for Bitcoin mining going into the next cycle. Sites can't get built out overnight, right? That's a months long process. So if you're mining already before the bull market comes, once the bull market comes, everyone else is going to be scrambling to get online, and you're just going to be hashing away, getting those, you know, those thick mining rewards and large profit margins. And, you know, by the time a lot of the new sites that get built out and those machines get plugged in, it might be the bear market by then. It's sort of what we saw in 2022, right? All the investment that was made in 2021, it took a long time to get online. So definitely that's the bullish case for Bitcoin mining going forward is this idea of ASIC commoditization.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I definitely see in the future, and who knows how far out that is, but I definitely see the hash rate itself being a new asset class that's globally traded in online exchanges, right? And so I'm definitely, you know, Blockware, you guys are doing it, developing a hash rate marketplace. That's super interesting. But there's a lot of other companies that's developing businesses on top of that, utilizing the hash rate as well, right? I think there's a company called Blockgrain that's essentially a lending product where you can collateralize hash rate and leverage the expected future Bitcoins that's mined with that hash rate and pull it forward and be able to finance projects with it, which is very interesting. And just kind of anything, as it becomes more commoditized, I think a lot of it will move to the cloud, right? And that's kind of where you guys are building, which is very interesting. If you guys can have a network of ASICs that's plugged in to the scarce resource, which is cheap power, cheap renewable power, mm-hmm. Hosted at leading edge data centers, then I can see a massive platform where it really opens up the market and makes Bitcoin mining a lot more accessible to everyone. It's kind of like the Robin Hood, right? And so it will massively expand the TAM of mining, where just regular retail folks like me and you can go and put down, whatever we can buy one ASIC or 10 ASICs, and we can be mining within a few seconds with just a click of a few buttons, right? And that's something that I'm really excited for. I can see, in the future, essentially, you could be streaming sats to your private keys with your hash rate that you can buy online, just because as it commoditizes, I think businesses that are building on or products in this space are going to reduce that friction to mine.
Yeah, 100% agree. We recently upgraded the platform too, so you can literally, you don't have to have an account and you could be mining within 60 seconds. And the best part is you buy through Bitcoin or the Lightning Network, right? It's all this circular Bitcoin economy backed by the mining rig that's out of sight, drawing from that cheap power. There's obviously, I think to anyone who's within the Bitcoin mining industry or the energy industry, there's a collision course, right? These two industries are so intertwined and meant to be together. So how do you think about the future with Bitcoin mining and energy companies? Like, what does that look like to you?
That's a really good question. There's definitely going to be a collision, like you said, because energy companies are, once they kind of realize the potential of Bitcoin and that it's here to stay, right? I don't see why they wouldn't want to tap into their excess store of energy and mine Bitcoin. They have, for the most part, I would think that they are very well capitalized with strong balance sheets. And when they see how profitable it can be to mine Bitcoin, especially if you time it right and build out infrastructure and acquire the machines ahead of a bull market, it's just another revenue source, right? But taking a step back, for just the energy market overall, obviously, I think Bitcoin is one of the greenest technologies in existence. It's very ESG, right? Just because if you think about just from a game theory or economic incentive standpoint, because electricity is probably the largest cost for Bitcoin miners, they're naturally incentivized to seek out the lowest lowest cost and cheapest electricity, which by definition is going to come from renewables, and not only from renewables, but stranded and excess energy that would otherwise be wasted. And it's kind of like the flared gas that you always hear about. With Irish Energy, they use 100% hydro, at least in the British Columbia sites, the three sites, it's 100% hydro. And because it's abundant, it was originally built out for all these older industries like the pulp and paper mills that have now left that area in British Columbia, Canada. And so because they were built out, there was CapEx put into that market, investments put in that market. By Iris Energy going in there and building out data centers and using that electricity where there's a lot of excess, they're actually helping the communities there or that area in Canada lower the average cost of power for the communities there, because otherwise, if Iris Energy wasn't there mopping up that being a new load in that market, then the utilities in that region would be forced to actually hike up the electricity costs for those communities because they have an investment to pay back, right? So just from that standpoint alone, so like if you think about by the very nature of them or being incentivized to look for lower cost energy. That's really helping drive a lot of innovation in the renewable energy markets as well. It allows new renewable energy developers to come in, right, and fund the build out of that infrastructure. And also, and there's a lot of innovation happening in this space to try to even bring the cost of power even lower, right? Because there's capital that's able to fund those type of projects.
Yeah. I find the hydro stuff super fascinating, because when anybody says renewable, I think what first comes to mind for most people is solar and wind, which when the sun goes down like it does every day, or if the wind's not blowing, you're not going to be able to produce any power. But hydro, that's 24/7. So I think that's super fascinating. And the fact that miners are portable, right? A lot of these, you know, these rivers out in the middle of nowhere, or these fields where the sun is shining a lot, there aren't people there to buy that energy. And so there's really no incentive for renewable projects to get built out in those locations, because there's no one to sell the energy to. It just doesn't make sense. And now you have Bitcoin miners just coming in and like, yes, we'll buy it all. As much as you produce, we're willing to buy, and we'll buy it 24/7, 365, and we'll turn off whenever you need to. Because unlike other large energy consumers, like a hospital or like a power plant or like a manufacturing plant or something, those companies don't have the flexibility to turn off, right? But Bitcoin miners can turn off on a dime in this programmatic way, because the machines are commoditized, right? So let's say they need to give 10% of the power they're consuming back to the grid. All right, they just turn off 10% of their machines, right? Because they're all basically consuming the same amount of energy, so you can program that. It's too perfect of a match there with Bitcoin miners and energy producers.
Yeah, absolutely. And by them shutting down, there's really no impact, right? Besides Bitcoin miners making a little bit less revenue, but there is no supply chain that's supporting that Bitcoin miner that will be impacted, yeah, right, from a cash flow standpoint. So it's beautiful. Yeah, there is a lot of symbiosis with energy markets, and I'm excited to see, you know, over the next 10 years how that develops.
Agreed. I think hopefully that should, because that's almost like a separate orange pilling idea in its own, right? You've got the financial, yeah, and economic fact of Bitcoin, all right, hedge against inflation, you know, resist monetary debasement, opt out of the traditional financial system. And completely separate to that is Bitcoin mining, energy markets, and demand response. So definitely should be a very helpful aspect in getting a favorable regulation towards Bitcoin. So before we wrap up, Yujia, is there anywhere we can send the audience to learn more about you and what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I'm a managing director at the Blue Shirt Group. You can go to our website, blueshirtgroup.com. But other than that, you know, I just view myself as a Bitcoiner before anything else. And so I try to go to all the conferences. I'll be at Pacific Bitcoin with the Swan team here coming up in a couple of weeks. And yeah, say hi if you're there, and excited to keep working in this space.
That's awesome. Thanks for coming on, Yujia.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. Take care.